Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer, joined today by Paul Gorst. How are we, Paul?
All good, yeah. Midway through, well, getting towards the midway point of the international break, aren't we?
It's like the dark side of the moon, this part.
Yeah, I mean, the second week I always find it hardest, but for now we're all right.
Is that why you're off next week?
Yeah, exactly why.
Yeah, and you're hearing the dulcet tones of Theo Squires. How are we, Theo?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm working all the way through.
Yeah, you love a Legends game, though, don't you? This is where you shine.
Yeah.
So you do, you love it.
International game next week, as well, don't I?
Oh, let's not talk international football. That's banned on the Blood Red podcast. If you like international football, listen to another podcast. We won't talk about it here. But few things to observe. First of all, sorry if you're listening at home, but I'll describe it to you. But if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, you can see that we've got a new setup. Ian, our producer, has moved us to the other side of the room, and we've got a little bookcase here with some books from our friends at Reach Sport. Some good ones in here. Intensity there, Robbo. 19 times, yeah. Nice new setup. And to go along with the new setup, we've got a new sponsor, which we made up about. NordVPN have come on board to sponsor the pod, which is really, really, really appreciated. So thank you to the guys and girls at NordVPN. We'll be talking a little bit about them. And I want to bring in a player or person of the week on Mondays, a NordVPN player.
It's a great week to do it, isn't it? International break.
International break's not the best, so we will start that. We'll probably wait a week on Monday.
We'll just give it Joe Gomez, back for England.
Yeah, well, Joe Gomez has deserved it almost every week at the moment, hasn't he? He does a lot. So, yeah, if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, please send in a question or thoughts, feedback, anything like that. We'll try and get round to them as we go on through the pod. And we're going to do things a little bit differently today. We're going to do sort of like half a normal pod, and then I've got 11 questions to ask you and do a little quiz for the Liverpool Legends tomorrow. So,
I'm going to get battered.
You are up against
it. That's it, the Legends correspondent himself.
Yeah, saying that, he hasn't got Google there to have a little sneaky look.
And you've got a better angle at the screen there, Ghosty.
So I might just have a little sneaky go on me NordVPN and just have a look at the answers.
And sneak on the answers, yeah. We'll see. And we want you to play along. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop your answers in the comments, because I want to see. I've deliberately made some of these questions pretty hard, so let's see if anyone can keep up with Theo, basically.
They were the good old days, weren't they? What was it, the shirt numbers one, the goal, who scored more goals for Liverpool?
Yeah, I did that, who scored more goals one, and that was a really good one. I'm pleased with that one. If you are watching, give us a like, subscribe, press the bell. If you're listening on podcasts, leave us a review. Give us 5 stars, give us 4, give us 3, give us 2, don't give us 1, don't give us 0, give us 5.
We get 6.
We can't get 6, unfortunately, but give us 5 and then just say below, I would have given you 6.
Yeah.
So, all those things. Where do we start? We start with, I think, Richard Hughes, because there's big news this week at Liverpool, and they've confirmed sort of an open secret, wasn't it? Richard Hughes is their next sporting director, Ghosty. Seems like things are starting to really, the wheels are starting to turn on a new era.
Yeah, it's been a big week for Liverpool, hasn't it, in terms of off-the-field structural plans. Michael Edwards coming in, obviously, is the CEO of football for Fenway Sports Group, which is essentially means that he's going to be the de facto head of the club, essentially, isn't he? He's taken over from Mike Gordon, who's obviously the day-to-day runner at Liverpool, and Edwards is going to overtake that. And he's definitely bringing in his man, isn't he, Richard Hughes, the soon-to-be new sporting director at Liverpool. I think it's interesting that it's the first external permanent appointment of a sporting director at Liverpool, because Edwards was given the role in 2016. Julian Ward sort of worked as his apprentice and then overtook that. And then Jörg Schmacker was a very much kind of temporary appointment, wasn't he? So Hughes is coming in, long-term contract, you'd imagine. Yeah. And comes highly recommended from Edwards, doesn't he? No, they've known each other 20 years, dating back to the days together at Portsmouth when Edwards was an analyst and Hughes was Scotland international midfielder and
captain,
one of the captain, yeah. And one of the things that's kind of shone through this week is how much he was very keen on not only studying his own game with Edwards's clips and all that type of stuff. You know, he was very much interested in the wider game, the European game. Obviously, Theo, you know a little bit about his background growing up in Italy, don't you? And apparently a huge lover of Italian football, of Spanish football, and that's where a lot of his contacts are based in Spanish football, we believe. Interestingly, he obviously worked on a deal to get Andoni Iraola to Bournemouth last summer, and he shares the same agent of a certain Xabi Alonso, so is the 2-2 making 4 there? We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's a crucial appointment that Liverpool needed, because we've seen just from Edwards' work really how important a sporting director is to the overall structure, certainly at a club like Liverpool, where it's a collaborative effort, and even more so with it being a new manager who won't wield the same sort of power as Jürgen Klopp. So yeah, I think it's an exciting one for people who are concerned with this type of stuff. I know a lot of fans aren't bothered and, you know, shrug it at all, and for them it's very much about the manager and the players, which is fair enough, but these roles are becoming more prominent in English football for a reason. So we'll see how it works. But I think having Edwards' expertise on board as well as Richard Hughes, I think that opens Liverpool up to several avenues of contacts and teams and clubs across Europe, and that'll only prove to be advantageous.
I mean, Gorsi just said that word a few times. I think it's the key word in all that. I mean, analytics for Liverpool is that, you know, they've always led last several years have led the way in terms of analytics, but contacts will be key, won't it? And we know that Michael Edwards has got great contacts throughout football. By all accounts, Richard Hughes has got really good ones as well, and together they should make Liverpool quite a force, shouldn't they, in terms of the transfer market and the wider market.
Yeah, well, from the sounds of it, there's a belief that the two of them can work really well together and complement each other really well. And we've already covered the contacts there, but then Liverpool have already got links in Portugal. Mm. So I think they're covering a big bulk of Europe here. Maybe Germany won't be as strong now with a Klopp going in Schmachter, but if they've made the contacts over the years anyway, and they're pretty much stepping up to be this really formidable force. And even though it's a new era at Liverpool, it's different with all these new figureheads coming in. A bulk of the people behind the scenes are the same, aren't they? Like, yeah. You've got Fallows, you've got Hunter, you've got Will Spearman as well. So Leicester have been working hard on the recruitment over the last few months since Schmachter's left, looking at who could be a transfer target in the summer. You bring in Hughes at the top of that, and then you've got Edwards. We're not really quite sure how involved he will be directly with the transfers, because it's not really his remit anymore. But there's plenty of reasons to be positive there, and it still feels very Liverpool, very same. Like,
I'm sure if Richard Hughes has, have you got a number for Red Bull?
Yeah.
You know, Michael Edwards will hand it over.
But yeah, like, they've already got these relations together, and the fact that Edwards and Hughes are so close, it's because they like view the game the same way, and they've got that respect over two decades worth. Mm. It is just someone who's coming in, who looks at it the same way, he's got the contacts and can prove what's already there. I mean, it's been really successful for a long period under Jürgen Klopp. It's exciting to see what a fresh face can do with it too.
I just want to say a big thank you to NordVPN for sponsoring the podcast. Not only do they sponsor the podcast, but they've come riding to my rescue, Ghosty, because I've had a problem for a few years now. Every summer, I fly off to France for a month to stay with my mother-in-law, myself and the family, and we take the kids over. And it's great, apart from staying with my mother-in-law, it's all good. But one problem I always have, it's always in August, and when we go, it's the start of the season, and you know it's like the start of the season, it's exciting. You know, if Liverpool win a couple of games, you want to watch Match of the Day, can't you? And it frustrates me. You know, I can watch highlights on YouTube, but it's not the same as watching Match of the Day. And but I can't get on the BBC website, because when you go on it, it says you can't watch in this location. And with NordVPN, I log on to my NordVPN and all that goes away. I can just watch what I want, when I want. And it's not just Match of the Day, it's Netflix. You know, I can watch all the shows that I like and carry on watching series that I've been watching in England, back over in France. So that's great. And I know for you, when you're travelling all around Europe with Liverpool, it comes in really handy because it has other possibly bigger benefits that really look after you, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, doing this job, you get the privilege to visit some wonderful places across the continent, and you're also having to file and do a lot of hard work, singing for your supper, and that sometimes involves filing your words from hotel bars, from the back of buses, from airport floors, and all kind of weird and wonderful places where you're sending your stuff from, and that's where NordVPN comes in handy, comes into its own. You know, we've been sending stuff across from all kinds of places, haven't we, across the last few years, and this is where the device really comes into its own. So can't speak highly enough of it. Had it not been for that, we might have been on the wrong end of one or two issues, which happened to me a few years ago before we were on NordVPN. I was a victim of cybercrime, I guess. My bank was hacked, flying in between Madrid to Liverpool and then back to Alicante, and lost a little bit of money that I was able to get back, thankfully. But had I been on the NordVPN, wouldn't have been an issue at all, and would have saved myself a lot of bank-related headaches. So yeah, can't speak highly enough of the app, and looking forward to continue using it.
Yeah, it's perfect for that sort of thing. If you're on public Wi-Fi or your hotspot or whatever, you know, in public places, you just log on to your app, and then you're protected from those nasty people that tried to take advantage of poor Gorsty. And yeah, there's 24/7 customer support to help you. There's dedicated apps on all platforms. I've got it on my phone. I've got it on my laptop, and you can have six devices. So the missus is on it, and I can look after the kids when I let them use devices when they're a bit older. So it's really, really handy. And it's the price of a couple of cup of coffees a month. So a couple of cups of coffee a month. So it's that easy, Gorsty. I mean, you're constantly putting these coffees through expenses, yeah. So it's not a big deal, is it? So yeah, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, just go to nordvpn.com/bloodred, and our link gives you an extra 4 months free on a 2-year plan, and there's no risk at all with their 30-day money back guarantee. We'll stick the link in the podcast description box, but honestly, really handy, really cheap, really, really easy to use. I'm logged into the app now and have been for the last, you know, a few days. You just log in once, it stays logged in. So it's that easy. And a big thank you for sponsoring our podcast. It's really, really appreciated. So let's get back to the show. Yeah, FSG will be delighted, won't they, Gorsy? I mean, again, I don't always compare. I feel like I end up doing this a lot in this podcast, but you look again at what's happening at United. They're trying to get in Dan Ashworth, aren't they? And that's become a protracted saga. Whereas FSG, it's been a couple of months now since Jurgen Klopp announced that bombshell news that he would leave in the summer. They've gone out and got the man they wanted in Edwards. He's quickly gone out and got the man he wanted. And you're just starting to see the building blocks go in place now, aren't
you? Yeah, and it looks like he's going to get the man he wants as well with Mark Purcell coming over from Bournemouth, the chief scout. He's not coming in to replace Liverpool's chief scout, Barry Hunter, based on the information we've got. So, you know, it remains to be seen what role that is, but certainly kind of beefing up the scouting department, which is by big club standards pretty lean at Liverpool, which might surprise. But yeah, it just feels like the building blocks are falling in place for a new structure, and the big one still to be resolved, isn't it, with the manager. But yeah, it does, you know, anyone who's maybe apprehensive for the post-Klopp era, you know, kind of looking at Manchester United as the example of how it can turn sour, and even Arsenal to an extent. You know, it's taken them a few years to get back on the steady footing, hasn't it?
Yeah.
After Arsene Wenger. I think it should inspire confidence, certainly with Michael Edwards at the helm, because his track record is second to none, isn't it? And if he says that Richard Hughes is the man to take on that role, then I suppose you've got to take that at face value and then see what the results are.
Can we have a quick chat before we move on about Fellows and Hunter? Because I think, as you mentioned before, Theo, you know, they've got that department at Liverpool with them two, Will Spearman, who stepped up when Ian Graham left. You know, I think Ian Graham and Michael Edwards, especially during that era, Julian Ward, got, rightly so, a lot of credit. But Fellows and Hunter, I mean, you both worked on so many transfer stories throughout the years. They are two people that are so key. I mean, I don't know which one wants to go first, but they're so key to what Liverpool do, aren't they? Go on, Theo. I mean, you mentioned them. They seem, it seems like Richard Hughes is going to be working so closely with them, and they seem key to that department, don't they?
Yeah, well, if you look at when everything seemed to improve under Liverpool, it's when Edwards got the promotion, Fallows came in, Hunter came in, Graham came in. He referenced that in his farewell letter, but he wasn't just name-dropping those two. It's like the whole team here are geniuses, and it's easy to go, oh, the sporting director's done this, and the sporting director's the one with the contacts, he's the one who does the negotiations. But there's a whole lot of work that goes into it. It's not one man who oversees everything. I think Richard Hughes did an interview with Bournemouth a couple of years ago, and he said this themselves, like, the manager can't look at everything, we can't look at everything. You've got to have a team there watching every game, following the players from the youngest age groups, and then you get the contacts, then you see what they can do, and you get this real understanding, and that gives you success for recruitment. And Fallows and Hunter, that they've been working on Liverpool's list of targets the last few months since Schmacht left. They've been the ones who have been working together with whoever the sporting director is over the last few years, and they've paid off time and time again. Like, the fact that Liverpool are onto their, what, fourth sporting director now in, or third sporting director in however many years, in quick succession, and Liverpool still successfully revamped the front three, which seemed impossible for so long.
Yeah.
And in the space of 12 months, they've got a broken midfield to one of the best in the country again, to the extent that they're challenging for the Premier League title, only not top on goal difference. And that's from a mixture of, we get Endo in, who's wrong side of 30, but a really good player. You're getting in Szoboszlai, McAllister on a cheap release clause. Gravenberch, putting the homework here across the board and getting so many good players. The fact that they're still there behind the scenes doing it, when you complement that with the people coming in, it is, like Gusty said, really encouraging for the future.
Yeah,
I also think as well, in terms of Liverpool scouting, you know, it's always seen as a big thing when Liverpool send scouts to X game. Yeah. And then you start speculating, it must be to watch that player, it must be to watch this player. But generally, the scouts will go, you know, dozens of games a season. And it's not necessarily to view one player. You know, you're looking at five, six or seven players. And you know, it's more to, you know, rule players out rather than rule them in. And maybe, you know, if you catch the scouts' eyes. But like I was saying, then with a lean scouting department that Liverpool have got, it's very much just more of an overview, and that will feed back into the departments with Fallows and Hunter and obviously the data side of things with Will Spearman and Dafydd Steele, I think he might be still there, Mark Howlett, is it? Just seems to be a very well-structured team behind the scenes. And I think Jürgen Klopp's personality has kind of taken the focus away from that at times. We've obviously written quite a lot about it, and one or two other places have, but generally I think a lot of the fans will just look to the manager and his decisions, and that departments are able to just crack on quietly behind the scenes, and that's probably the way they prefer it. So it'll be interesting to see if that dynamic changes with all this news of Edwards and Hughes and a new manager coming in. But certainly while Klopp's been there, his personality and the kind of the profile of the man has taking the focus away from that department.
I seem like maybe hear from Hughes a bit more and Edwards than we have predecessors. Like, obviously Hughes is a former player, he's used to that media side a bit more, and you just had the quotes in the piece there, but the fact that he was doing those interviews with Bournemouth a couple of years ago, he's not going to just completely hide away. With Edwards in his new role, he's going to have to speak a bit more as well. So maybe it is going to be a bit more transparent, but at the same time, they're hiding way behind the scenes, doing all their homework. You're not going to know exactly who they're going for until the new manager's in, and it's Liverpool can just sneak up and get someone out of nowhere that they've done time and time again over the years.
That's what I like about Liverpool's transfer department, because they don't get swept away, do they, in panic. You know, you look at other clubs, you look at the way Chelsea operate, Man United operate, even some of the stuff Newcastle have done recently. You know, the two best clubs at it are Man City and Liverpool, and they just quietly go about their business. They judge themselves, and they don't let the outside world sort of judge them.
Yeah.
They do, it's a bit of a cliche, but they block out the noise, don't they, and sort of carry on with what they're doing. And all right, Edwards became this sort of mythical figure, didn't he? But not through him going out there and saying things or doing things. It was sort of an organic thing from Liverpool fans saying, God, we've got another great signing, or we've just sold Dominic Solanke for 20 million, you know. So it was through that, through his actions rather than his words, that he became this mythical figure. And I expect them that to be very much the order of the day when they continue saying that. What do you think then, Gorsley, will be, you and I are the bit of a debate piece about this. Will be Liverpool's priorities going into the summer? Obviously, a new manager will have a huge say, but I'm sure Richard Hughes and the team will be immediately working on the future of the squad.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it now and it only looks like a bit of fine-tuning needed. I think Conor Bradley has probably shown that he can be depended on to be a bit of a deputy right-back. Jarrell Kwanza has stepped into the void at centre-back. So, you know, across the rest of the squad, there are not too many gaps, are there? You know, Thiago will leave, and that, for me, presents an opportunity to recruit a high-quality, injury-free midfielder, because Liverpool haven't been able to rely on him at all, have they, for the last 12 months and more. So I think for me, you know, that should be an area for Liverpool to target. Someone who's going to come in the manner of a Szoboszlai or a McAllister, someone who's, you know, got plenty of years ahead of them but is already established as a quality international, and that would be a good place to start for me. Elsewhere, there's not too many more gaps to fill. You know, Joel Matip probably going to leave, isn't he, on a free transfer.
I did have that down. Would you give him a contract at all just to buy them time?
It's difficult, isn't it? Because he's in his 30s now. He's not a player like Van Dijk. I think they're the same age, about 32, but he's not a player like Van Dijk who's proven that he can play 50 games a season. Matip has never really convinced with his injury record, and, you know, it sounds harsh to cut someone adrift. He's been an incredible servant, an underrated servant, really, outside of the Liverpool confines. But that's why these people like Hughes are paid to make these ruthless decisions. So for me, probably not. I think you'd be looking at cutting the strings now with Matip and wish him well. Wish him good luck on getting fit, finding a new club, and hope he does the business there. And I think Liverpool can start looking at someone younger, more durable, and you know, we can compete with a place with Van Dijk, Kanate and Kwanzaa.
With Matip, we don't really know how long he's out for. Like, we just ruled out until the end of the season.
I mean, it's an ACL injury, out since December, so it's going to be 7-8 months.
It could be that. And then it takes time to come back. Like, we don't know how it's going to affect him anyway. And your new manager coming in, it's a lot of ground to make up there for a younger player, as we saw with Van Dijk. Never mind one of his age with his injury record. Probably it's just easier to move on. Obviously, if he's not fully back in the summer, let him carry on his rehab at the club. And then the new manager can look in behind the scenes. But you don't want to, oh, Matip's back, Kwanzaa, you're back to fifth choice. You want to give Kwanzaa those opportunities. And Gomez has done so well this season from playing more. And you've got Kanate there as well. Matip's probably time to move on.
Yeah. Let us know, by the way, if you're listening and you're listening on YouTube or Facebook, let us know in the comments where you think Liverpool needs to strengthen this summer. And whether you think that Joel Matip deserves a new contract. On that, Theo, where do you think should be their priority?
Well, I think it depends on outgoings, really. Like, Kelleher is doing so well at the moment, but does that mean he's more likely to go because he's shown he can be a number one? And then we need a new goalkeeper. Like, we know Adrian's probably going to go as well, so they're going to need to look at that goalkeeping department. It just depends on the rest of the squad. Like, there's always going to be speculation linking Salah with Saudi Arabia. Diaz seems to get linked with a move every week at the moment as well, and he's a bit older than the rest of the front three. Obviously, the three of us did that panel piece on Gakpo last week. And a new manager's coming in, he's going to look at that squad and have his own ideas. I know I'm going back 20 years here, but you think of like Danny Murphy being first choice of Liverpool for so long under Julio, and then Rafa Benitez just didn't want him. So a new manager comes in, he's going to have his own ideas of who's part of the squad and who's not. You've still got Bacetic coming back from injury and so many good youngsters there who could stake a claim, not out of nowhere, but show that they're more than what they are at the moment. On paper, they don't need a right back anymore because of Bradley, but if the new manager comes in and says, right, Trent, you're my midfielder now, and Bradley's your first choice right back, they do need someone. What do you do with Robertson and Tsimikas? Robertson's out of contract in a couple of years, wrong side of 30. Tsimikas has never been ever-present first choice. Like, you can pick at goalkeeper, right back, centre back, left back, midfielder, forward, but it just depends what the new manager wants to do with the players already in his squad. You'd have no problems with this squad can have another year, the same as Klopp did in 2019 after winning the Champions League. But if there is little tweaks there and there, I'm sure they'll get the right players in.
I think it's less prevalent now, though, where the manager comes in and says, don't fancy him, move them on. Certainly at the level Liverpool are at, you know, a new manager coming in, you'd imagine, will be a step up for whoever it is, and they're going to be delighted with the squad they've inherited, I'm sure. So I don't think it's necessarily going to be a case of, like you referenced there, Danny Murphy, for example, a new manager coming in and saying, you know, off the top of my head, not too sure on Curtis Jones. Let's try and move him on. I think Liverpool squad will generally stay quite settled, no matter who the new manager is.
Yeah, I think so. I think you look back at Danny Murphy. I think that was beneath us at the time. Liverpool had to sell to buy. They weren't in the best position, where they, so they had to.
He had more power as well.
Yeah, he had more power. Like you say, I think the great thing about this season for Liverpool and for a new manager and for Richard Hughes and all that is that they can, like you've just said, fine tune rather than overhaul. And they've got such a great crop of youngsters that have come to the fore this season in Kwanzaa, Bradley, you know, even like Bobby Clark. You know, you'd look at him, wouldn't you, and go, right, he's first team squad next season, and you'd expect him to build on what he's done this season. You know, maybe someone like James McConnell might go on loan, but he's shown that, you know, in the cups and in some games, he can do a job.
So you've got kids coming back as well, like Chambers is doing well at Wigan, yeah. Morton's doing well at Hull.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Fabio Carvalho's an interesting one, isn't he?
There's loads for the new manager to look at in the summer.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
For me, it feels like they've got a good, robust squad now, and they just can go out and go, you know what? Yeah, Thiago's moving on. So we can spend a bit of money on one good midfielder we know that makes a real difference. The same in the centre-back department. You know, Paul Flanagan, a long-time listener, thanks, Paul, has said that he'd give Matip a contract. Again, I can kind of see the argument for it if he was, you know, maybe... Depends on wages, doesn't it? If he sort of wasn't that highly paid, and they could keep him in for his experience. But for me, again, you've got Gomez, you've got Quanta, you've got Konate, and you've got Van Dijk. If you could go out and buy one more now, then you can use Gomez across the back four, and they'd have four really, really solid centre half options, and then you can keep planning for the future.
Beyond them, there is no further backup at this point, because Reece Williams isn't going to make it in that first team. Kometio, he doesn't look like he's going to be able to step up. Nat Phillips surely will get his move away this summer. Like, there's no, oh, we've lost two to injury. Yeah. Who can we call upon next? So maybe there is room for another body there. And that could be a Matip, but I still think fresh start.
Yeah. My only issue with Matip is we don't know when he's going to come back. Normally it's 8 to 9 months, like you say, Theo, and then you're into August time, September. When does he play? Is Liverpool going to be back in the Champions League? So those games probably a bit more pressurised than Europa League group games. So it'd be difficult to find the minutes for him. So I'm not too sure. Really not.
Yeah, it'd be interesting how they use the loan market, I think, in the summer as well. People like Ben Doak.
Yeah.
You know, we expected this to be a big season for him. Unfortunately, he's had a lot of injuries. I think he would have featured quite a lot, especially over the sort of December, January period when Liverpool suffered a lot of injuries. But you might look at him and say, a season out on loan doesn't good. Kate Gordon, you know, he's probably looking at season out on loan, isn't he? You know, people like that, they could use the loan market for. So I think Liverpool squad's in a very good position, and all credit to Klopp, who's sort of guided them this way and will leave them in a very good place, whether they win any more trophies this season or not. I think it's primed.
Imagine if you said this 12 months ago, Klopp's going to go, but you're going to be losing a load of senior players like Henderson, Fabinho, but you're going to be right up there at the top of the Premier League, won a trophy, could win two, could win three. It's just madness how it's turned about, but it's actually all really positive.
Yeah, it's testament to the work he did over the summer, didn't he? You know, you look at last summer, or the end of last season, it was a really poor one for Liverpool. Starting to show shoots of recovery, weren't they, around the springtime, but still disappointing season. And then you lose Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita, Fabinho, Henderson, Firmino, Milner. And it could easily have gone the other way, couldn't it? But they got the recruitment right. Klopp found the energy for another season. And then it's just gone strength to strength, hasn't it, month by month. It's been a really organic process this season for me. It's not where Liverpool have flown out the traps and they've looked like contenders straight away. They've just built on it slowly but surely, and then around Christmas time find themselves top of the league, and then that's when the conversation starts. Then they have an incredible January and then get to the final of the cup, and then that gives the momentum to push on. And it's just been a gathering momentum, really, hasn't it? Rather than just straight away feeling like Liverpool are back.
You've seen them grow as a team, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Right, you go right back to the start of the season when they were conceding early goals and people getting sent off and they were fighting back. I mean, the thing you said recently, then you're on a pod, that Newcastle game felt like a huge, huge result in the season. I think when you look back at this season, whatever they achieve, that game felt like one where I think everyone had written them off.
Yeah, it looked like they'd gone over the hill finally, hadn't it? Yeah. Newcastle were there.
Yeah.
We're going to get in their place for like the long term, didn't it?
And you look at what the two clubs have done since, and I think Liverpool proved to the outside world, and probably proved to themselves that day, do you know what? We are still to be reckoned with if we pull together and play as a team and use the squad. And they've done that well. You know, people that day, Quanta stepped up, didn't he? Gomez stepped up. Nunes finally sort of felt like he went from potential to having a real say on the way Liverpool could play and the results. So it was a really significant day, I think, in the season. Just going back to Hughes, three contract decisions he will have, certainly in his in-tray. Do people even say in-tray anymore?
We did in the piece the other day.
Stacked in-tray, my phrase, yeah.
But certainly there'll be three contract decisions stacked up in there, won't there, in Salah, Trent and Virgil van Dijk. I mean, they aren't, well, with the exception of Trent, they aren't easy decisions to make, are they? Because both Van Dijk and Salah are at that age where they'll still want big money, rightly so. But
well, the two highest earners, aren't they?
Yeah. How do they feature going forward? How would you both resolve that?
I mean, with Salah, the contract he signed 2 years ago was based on trust and belief in... Firstly, Salah in himself, thinking that he could still do what he's been doing for the previous sort of 4 or 5 years at Liverpool. That has proven to be the case, hasn't it? He scored 51 goals since he signed that contract for Liverpool in less than 2 seasons. So he's shown that he can still do it. Now, sort of knowing a little bit about what you hear and what you read about Mo Salah, I'm sure he backs himself to carry on next season. So if he thinks he can still do it for another X amount of years, I think he's earned that trust from the club to believe in him again and invest in him to continue doing what he's done at Liverpool for the last, what is it now, 6, 7 years? So for me, I'd be looking at an extension maybe on similar terms if it's possible. You know, we know that there are heavily incentivized clauses in his contract in terms of goal returns and that type of stuff, isn't it? That'll always be the case for a player like that, I suppose. So maybe Liverpool can look to sort something there. It'll be obviously Hughes overseeing it rather than Julian Ward a couple of years ago, but Edwards will have a say in it as well. He's obviously worked with Salah in previous negotiations and Salah's agent Rami Abbas. So yeah, I mean, I can see the people who argue that you don't want to gamble too much on a player who's going to be 32 in June. But I think this is a very special case that Liverpool are dealing with, and I think he'd back himself to carry on, and I think Liverpool should give him the chance to prove it.
Yeah, agreed.
It was only a few years ago we'd always have the debate of which of the front three is the better player. And there was a little period where you always back Mane. But you look at them now where Salah is still outscoring all of them in the higher level, and he's getting 20, 30 goals, assists every single season. His standards have not dropped. If anything, he's getting better and better. He's not really had much game time in the past 2, 3 months, but he's still reaching those same levels. If he does that, he wants to stay, and he's affordable to keep him. You keep him. Like, if he's at that level, you can't let him go. If you try and replace him, that you are letting go of the best right-sided, left-footed forward in world football. How do you replace that? Klopp's always said he's going to be like a Ronaldo, Ibrahimovic, a Messi. You can just keep doing it into his mid-30s. So there's at least another 2, 3 years there we could be competing at this level. And it's not as though he's done the Messi or the Ronaldo yet of, I'm just going to go and stand up front. He's still got the work rate. He's still getting back and defending. He's still out on the wing, cutting inside, beating all those men. And he's still got such a good pass. He's still got such a good pass for him as well. Like the assist there as well. He was so close to setting up a wonderful goal, wasn't he? And just on his return a couple of weeks ago, when he's having that impact on games and it's not dropping off, how can you even consider letting him go? The only way it changes is if he thinks, right, I've achieved everything I want to achieve and I want to move on. But when you've got another Premier League title up for grabs, you've got another Champions League title up for grabs, it's not the time yet.
Yeah, my thing with Salah is, what do you get for him that makes it worthwhile? And I don't really necessarily, you know, there was this talk of 150 odd million from Saudi. Let's see if that materialised. But even if it did, could Liverpool go and spend that money? It's not as if they could go out and buy Mbappe. You know, that's not going to happen. So could they go out and spend 150 million on a player that replaces him? I don't really necessarily think they can. We've seen it before with Spurs when they sold Bale for that sort of money. And, you know, it's when Liverpool sold Coutinho, they could go out, couldn't they? Get Alisson and they could get Van Dijk, two areas where they needed to improve and two targets that they had. I don't really think the same works for Salah. I think it's gonna be a team thing. I think you replace him by allowing others to grow like Nunes and become an even better player. So I just don't think you can take that money and splosh it on another player, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the profile and the cost, there are very few players who you can bring in for Mo Salah. You know, you are talking at Mbappe levels.
Is there any names? Someone's just asked, who would you bring in?
I haven't even contemplated a scenario where Salah leaves. You know, if Liverpool were to bring in two players instead of one to try and counteract it, they've got six players up front there now. When are these players going to play? You know, we've seen that rotation and injuries do happen, but I'm not convinced that that you're able to do that.
Trent is another player who has been linked with a move away. Real Madrid linked with him today.
Tentatively, shall we say, in Spanish media.
Sorry. But just quickly, someone said Salah won't be here next year. Deal done with Saudi. Martin Gillespie on Facebook. Maybe Martin knows a bit more than us. But
maybe it's come out on Twitter while we've been recording.
I certainly won't be betting on Mohamed Salah leaving the club this summer. I think the Saudi thing, you don't hear as much noise.
You wonder how much appetite is there for these players now after a year of a massive influx of European-based players there. I'd imagine a lot of the feedback is not hugely complimentary of the standard of games, the intensity, the low crowds. You know, he's only got to give Jordan Henderson a bell, hasn't he? He lasted a few months, you know, tarnished quite a lot of his Liverpool legacy, if we're being honest, and was back on the first plane to Amsterdam as soon as the January transfer window opened, really. So, I just wonder how much the Saudi revolution is, how much juice is left in that, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
But Saudi, you can give it the time, though. Say he signs another 2-3 years, then you'll know if Saudi is the real deal or not. If they can still offer that sort of money in 2-3 years, then maybe it will grow a little bit more and it will have got that stability. The crowds will have picked up a little bit. But if it's just dropped off, why waste a couple of years there?
I don't think the money's an issue from their perspective. I think it's more...
I was thinking more like China, you know, that dropped off.
Yeah, I think Saudi Arabia's a different kettle of fish, really, but it's more, for me, how much do players want to go? And okay, you're earning an obscene amount and we can't even imagine what that's like, but hardly paupers to begin with, are they, these Premier League-based players or you know, big clubs across Europe?
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I think as well, I've said in a few pods, I feel like Salah, I feel like he seems to enjoy himself a bit more. I feel like he seems to be taking on a bigger role in the squad. I feel like his personality, I don't know, you know, not necessarily in public, but you can just, it just feels like he's even more of a factor around the place. And I don't know whether he'd necessarily be ready to walk away from that just yet. I don't know. I just, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't be putting money on him going to Saudi this summer. I think he either sees out his contract at Liverpool or they at some point next year or towards the end of this year announce an extension. And like you say, I think if you can kind of keep him on similar terms or, you know, heavily incentivised terms where you say to him, you keep it, we challenge you to perform at this level, and if you perform at this level, we'll pay you the money that you think you deserve, then all parties are happy, aren't they?
Yeah, just one final point. I don't think wages would be an issue because they paid them that for 2 years and a year of that when they haven't had the Champions League income.
Yeah.
At the same time, when they've lost Milner, Firmino, Henderson, Lutinho, Keita, big earners.
Yeah, Matip will be quite a big earner. Well, he's been there a long time and done very well. So we'll go one question on the keepers. Someone's asked about the keepers. With Adrian probably moving on his contract.
Done that every year for three or four years.
We have said that every year, but I think at some point that will come to an end. You know, he's Liverpool's Scott Carson, isn't he? He seems to be there every year at Man City. And then Kelleher potentially leaving. I mean, I don't necessarily think anyone's had that from Kelleher or his people, but I think there's just this feeling of Kelleher can't continue to be such a good second-choice goalkeeper without moving on. But I think there's still incentives for Kelleher to stay at Liverpool, do you not think?
Well, you go, Wilson.
I think someone put this to Klopp the other week before the Forest game, and he said he'd never really countenance selling him. Kelleher's played more this season than he ever has for Liverpool, so maybe the thinking's changed behind deputy goalkeepers. You know, he's just won the Carabao Cup with Liverpool for the second time. If he'd have moved on further down the pecking order, he wouldn't have got anywhere close to a major trophy if he'd have moved, you know, without being disrespectful to a Brentford or to Nottingham Forest, who were after him in January. He's a very laid-back character, just tends to breeze through things. Whenever you speak to him, he doesn't get ruffled or anything like that.
Himself as well.
Yeah, and maybe he thinks learning from one of the best in the world in Alisson is great, and he knows his times will come, and certainly it has this season. So I just wonder whether the thought process has changed now for stuff like that.
I think the flip side of that, Theo, is back in the Champions League next year.
Yeah.
He doesn't play the European games. You know, there's going to be, unless Alisson suffers, touch wood, he doesn't, but suffers a big injury, there's going to be fewer opportunities, you would think.
Yeah, I think Klopp pretty much said that was part of the reason how they could persuade him to stay, because they could offer him the Europa League. He's not going to have that next year. And with Alisson, if he stays, he's first choice. He's best goalkeeper in the world. It's just a very hard position to fancy sitting on the bench again and just waiting for an opportunity. You're not going to lose your first choice keeper for this long every single season. Like, maybe it gets to the point where Alisson decides he wants to do like a Fabinho and move on at some point, and there is that opening and they can have that conversation behind the scenes. But if you are relying on Alisson to be your first choice for a good few years, I can't see Kelleher staying. He deserves that opportunity to move on. The same we say for a few players now. Like, you've delivered for Liverpool whenever they've needed you, but you deserve more than this. What's he going to stick around for? Winning the League Cup again? He's already won it twice. There's more he can achieve.
Of course, I know you mean, but... Like us, so I think there's an element of me that I think looks at Kelleher. Do you want to go and play for a Brentford? You'll play 38 games a season, but they will expose more of your flaws as well.
Has he done well enough during this run to do better than a Brentford?
Yeah, possibly. No, possibly he has. You're right.
He's put a few millions on his price tag.
Yeah. If I was any club outside, probably. Actually, I don't. Honestly, any club outside of Liverpool and Man City.
He's better than the two Arsenal have got.
Yeah, I think he's better than two Arsenal have got. I think he's better than Onana. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Many, many clubs in the Premier League would...
That's in Chelsea's lot.
Yeah, Chelsea needs a goalkeeper. Yeah.
Chelsea needs a goalkeeper, I think.
Tottenham got a good one, and Vicario's good. He's had a good season.
All right. Better than anyone at Newcastle? I'd say so.
Depends how Newcastle want to play.
Did you like Nick Pope there, don't they?
Yeah.
Better than Brighton's?
Yeah, Brighton don't even know the first choice is. They change it every
week. Yeah.
So I think you know, many, many Premier League clubs would love to have him. It would just be really intriguing to see what goes on with him. You know, I like Kelleher a lot. And like you say, I'd sort of wish him well if he moves on. But
maybe they get a good sister club with FSG and just sell him there. Yeah. Or Lindis takes him to Ajax or something.
I do think this would
keep
be the
best. The family.
If they do sell him, a buyback clause would be the absolute best thing you could have in Kelleher's contract wherever he goes. Before we move on to our quiz, quick chat about Trent. There is those rumours. He is out of contract in a couple of years. Surely that gets resolved. You know, he's a lad who's grown up supporting the club.
Yeah.
But they does sometimes feel like, and it's not just Liverpool who have done this over the years, that there's an element maybe on both party sides of just taking the whole situation for granted a little bit.
Yeah, I think certainly from Liverpool's perspective, that could be levelled against them. They did it with Steven Gerrard all those years ago, didn't he? And almost paid the price. And, you know, be reluctant to say it's repeating itself again here because we're not privy to the ins and outs, but why wouldn't you want to get that sorted as soon as possible, regardless of who the manager's going to be and who the sporting director is or whatever? Obviously, a lot of changes to the high-profile roles at Liverpool in recent weeks and months, but that surely has to be one of the first things on the to-do list, isn't it? You know, we know that Liverpool are going to be recruiting a new manager and that will take up a bulk of the workload, but 25-year-old vice-captain, one of the best, most creative players in the Premier League, he'd be, you know, climbing through hoops to get him tied down, and I'm sure he'd love to stay. So feels like relatively straightforward, but while there's no noise, I guess the speculation will continue.
And if you're Real Madrid, you're mad not to monitor the situation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not kind of scared by that at all. You know, no. Real Madrid, why wouldn't they be looking at that situation?
10 years ago, it's different, isn't it? Liverpool aren't where they are now, but they can offer Trent whatever he wants to achieve in the game, and it's not as though he's ever done some public flirt and going, I'd love to play overseas one day. It seems his dream is to just play for Liverpool, be the captain one day.
Well, he's vice-captain now, isn't he? So when Van Dijk leaves, he sort of becomes the captain. So just there quickly before we do that quiz that I'm desperate to do, I've got Nunes in the title of this podcast, so we should just... I want to talk about the theory that you and I had talked about before, Corsi. Nunes withdrawing from the Uruguay squad felt like a bit of precaution for Liverpool, maybe even a little bit of Alex Ferguson.
Kidology.
Yeah, kidology. Mm. But you think Liverpool should do it a little bit more often?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting listening to Gary Neville on Stick to Football yesterday that come out, and he's talking about the March international break that Ferguson hated, and he used to pick and choose who was going for England. And when you're in the midst of a title race, sometimes you have to do that, I guess. Maybe the game's changed, but no surprise to see Saka pull out of England duty. Kevin De Bruyne didn't go with Belgium. There's some speculation over Erling Haaland with Norway. And Liverpool obviously moved mountains and tried to soothe relations with Egypt to get Mohamed Salah to stay on Merseyside, didn't he, after his hamstring issue? And fair enough, that was granted. But I just wonder whether couldn't Liverpool have argued that Konate didn't have to go with France because he hasn't played the last 3.5 games at Liverpool. There he is now training with France. Klopp said after the United game that Gakpo had an ankle injury Diaz felt his groin, but they've both gone off on international duty. And given the injury problems Liverpool have had, they can ill afford any more. And Nunes staying behind to work on a individually tailored training regime while he's checking over his hammy.
He's out on holiday, isn't he? Saw him driving around in a little car with his kid.
Yeah, well, I think they're off this week, aren't they? So fair play, you're so much needed time away. But yeah, I just feel like Liverpool, maybe the game doesn't work quite like that these days, but Klopp could have taken a leaf out of Ferguson's book there and just had a little quiet word and say, look, how desperate are you to play these friendlies? We've got a title to win, the Europa League to win.
Is it something like Nunes was guaranteed? If he carries on playing, it's guaranteed to be in Uruguay's squad, isn't it? It's not as if you're one of those players who's still trying to prove yourself. I mean, he's in the squad, isn't it?
It depends on the relationships you've got with the directors at the international teams, because it was like there was good relations with Brazil when they were negotiating however long ago that was.
It had to be, really, didn't it?
Yeah, that had to be. Whereas even Saka's had to go and report for England duty and been overlooked by their medical staff for them to send him back. Yeah. Like, you've got to actually have something wrong with you for it to happen. They can't just pull a quick one, can they?
I don't know. I'm sure there's excuses can be made. Anyway, there's a lot of people watching the pod, so please get involved. We're going to do a quiz. Liverpool Legends play tomorrow against Ajax at Anfield. They do this once a year now, the foundation. It's for a great cause. Yeah. It's a great game.
You're going this time?
Yeah, going tomorrow. Taking
the boys?
Taking just one of them. Our youngest is a bit too young, but Samuel, my oldest, going to take him. I'm taking my nephew with my brother as well. So I'm really looking forward to it. They're great occasions. And I took him to his first game last year, and it was incredible. Loved it. Pressure's not on, so we can really enjoy it and we can wander around the stadium and see a bit of it. So really looking forward to it. But Theo is the biggest, I'd say, sort of Liverpool
anorak
that I know.
Like,
so
data.
Boffin.
If you are watching on YouTube or you're watching on Facebook, please drop in your answers. If you can beat Theo, I'd be surprised. Because I've made this very, very difficult. So let's see what we can do. Gorsi, sorry about this, but off we go. And I'll read the squad out to you at any point if you want. Well, in fact, I'll read it before we start so that you've got them fresh in your mind. So goalkeepers, Yeah, as you do there, Chris Kirkland, Sander Vesterveld. Defenders, Daniel Agger, Fabio Aurelio, Sammy Hippier, Kavame, Martin Skrtel and Gregory Vignal. Midfielders, Igor Bisjan, Steven Gerrard, Mark Gonzalez, Maxi Rodriguez, Momo Sissoko and Jay Spearing. And then forwards, Ryan Babel, Gibril Cisse, Nabil El Zahedeh, Kaut, Yari Litmanen and Fernando Torres, making his first appearance for the Legends team. So, right, please do get involved.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Who in that Liverpool Legends squad has the most international caps?
Do we have to, like...
No, but just jump in.
I'm going to guess, like, it'll be one of the Finnish lads, Yari Litmanen.
If not him, I'd say Gerrard, because I know he's got over 100.
Well, it is Yari Litmanen, and you, Theo, would do very well there. He's got 137 caps for Finland. He played till he was, what, 39, didn't he, Yari Litmanen? Great player.
He's been signing
for decades, didn't he? Played for him in the 80s, 90s, noughties, teenties.
Brilliant player. If you were lucky enough to see him play for Liverpool, even though it was a short period of time and it felt a little bit wasted at times, really, really good player. Next one, Maxi Rodriguez. How many goals did he score for Liverpool? I'm going to give you multiple choice. Was it 20 or was it 17 or was it 15?
20. He scored a couple of hat-tricks, didn't he?
Going for 20.
17.
Theo's right again. It's Theo 2.
2-0.
0.
Got an all to do now.
Please let us know in the comments if you're 2 for 2. In 2019, Martin Skrtel joined Atalanta before leaving after how long? Was it 9 days? Was it 12 days? Or was it 3 weeks?
12 days?
Yeah, I'll say 12 days as well.
You're both wrong. It was 3 weeks. His wife didn't like Bergamo.
Don't remember that at all.
I went back to Turkey. Yeah, I'd rather live in Italy.
Yeah, I asked.
Got to Lake Como.
Yeah. Right, so I finally tripped you up, Theo. Gerrard and Torres, this is a good one, I think. How many combined goals and assists do they have between them for each other? Obviously, a great combination.
There's multiple choice.
So there's
this one.
Multiple choice. So 29, 24, 19.
I'm going to go for the highest one. 29, was it?
29.
What was the middle one?
29, 24, 19.
They set up a lot, didn't they? 09. 08, 09. I'll go with the middle one.
It's 19.
Is it, yeah?
Yeah, LFC history. Locked on, yeah. I'm quite surprised about that. Obviously, great memories. Favourite Gerrard and Torres combination moment?
With Danny against Newcastle, was it?
It's got to be, hasn't it?
I was up there. The ball to Gerrard and Torres against West Ham in the green kit. Gerrard goes around the keeper, yeah.
Did Gerrard stop his first one at Chelsea too?
Yeah, he did, yeah. Outside the foot, down the line.
Yeah, that was a lovely ball, that, yeah.
Yeah, but I love that Newcastle one. Just like I think Torres chests it to Gerrard.
Yeah,
Gerrard
1-2.
Nods it into his path and then
rampaging, wasn't he? Yeah. I just remember Preno writing about that, about Pele. Pele took around the keeper, but missed.
It was that little shimmy with the knees, wasn't it? Which was
going to be a lot slower doing that tomorrow, aren't they?
So good. So you're 2 for 4 out of these questions. Fabio Aurelio scored direct free kicks against which three teams?
Bolton, Portsmouth, Manchester United.
Bolton. If it's 4 teams, then I'm struggling because it
was it not Bolton?
Chelsea?
Oh, yeah.
Chelsea. Gorsley's pulled one back. Yeah.
That was his other goal. Yeah. It was a volley from outside the box.
Yeah. Gorsley's pulled one back. With the exception of Steven Gerrard, who in that LFC squad made the most appearances for the club?
Did you say Hippier?
Yeah. Gorsley's pulled 2 back. He beat you to 500 it.
500 and something.
This could be the upset of the century here. Right. Who made the most appearances against Liverpool in that squad? No dead space. I'll read the squad to you again. What do you think? Yeah, to do that, Chris Kirkland, Sander Vesterveld, Agger, Aurelio, Hippier, Kavame, Skrtel, Vignal, Bisjan, Gerrard, Gonzalez, Rodriguez, Sissoko, Spearing, Babel, Cisse, Elzar, Kaut, Litmanen.
Was it Torres?
It was Torres. Yeah. He's ahead. Gorsley's ahead.
Can't give me a chance to answer it.
Well, it's not my fault. You've got to dive in. You're watching history be made.
I was thinking not many of them played against Liverpool.
It's only going to be like Kirkland or...
Eight appearances. Right. This player played for Liverpool. He played in Spain, France, Italy, China, Indonesia, Hong Kong and Mexico.
Lewis Goss. Oh, wait. Is he in the squad?
Rodriguez, no, not in the squad. So name the countries again, please.
Liverpool. Well, we are a country. Liverpool, the Republic of Liverpool, Spain, France, Italy, China, Indonesia, Hong Kong, Mexico.
But he's not in the squad?
He's in the squad.
Who's in the squad?
Yeah.
Nabil El Zahr?
No.
Go through him again.
Give up if you... So I've gone through him again.
Skirtle?
No. Dudek, Kirkland, Westerveld, Aga, Aurelio, Hippier, Cavame, Skirtle, Vignal, Bischan, Gerrard, Maxi Rodriguez, Mark Gonzalez, Momo Sissoko, Jay Spearing.
Oh, it's my most Sissoko.
Yeah, it goes 3-3. He's pulled it back. Well done, Theo.
Cook off the pens, this.
It's going deep. Against which team would Mark Gonzalez score on his Liverpool
team? McCarthy Eiffel.
You did? I did know that one. Did know it.
That was a good one. And I think Theo might know this one, so you've got to be prepared. Ryan Babel once nearly got a deadline day move. He nearly caught the Babel copter ride to which club?
West Ham.
Yeah.
I did know that one as well.
5-3 Theo.
Tired in the latter stages here.
Two players in the squad have scored in the Champions League final, the League Cup final, the Derby against United, against Arsenal and against Chelsea.
Steven Gerrard and Dirk Kuyt.
Yeah, Theo's wrapped it up 6-3, and that is the
resounding, really.
It was a little moment there. I thought you were going to beat him.
Final 15, but,
you know, he's like Man City, isn't he? In the final straight, you just know he's going to put all those all those wins together. So congratulations, Theo, and thank you to our listeners. Yeah, if you're going to the game tomorrow, really enjoy it. It's a great occasion for some great causes, and I can't wait. Thanks very much for listening. If I'm looking for you on social media, where can I find
at PT Ghost? That's GORST.
Yeah, and if I'm looking for you, Theo, where can I find you?
At Theo Squires Echo.
And I'm at Joe Rimmer 88 on Twitter. Come and say hello. Give us some feedback. Give us your thoughts. Tell us what you'd like us to improve or what you'd like us to include.
More quizzes.
More quizzes. If you enjoyed that, tell us if you did or didn't. Lots of people actually asked last week what did people want from the podcast. A lot of people said karaoke. So
karaoke,
you'd beat me on that.
You would beat Theo at karaoke,
I've been bringing a crate of ale.
We'll have to do it maybe for the Christmas special. But big thank you to our new sponsors, NordVPN. We'll get that player of the week or person of the week started very soon, maybe a week Monday. And we will be back on Monday for our next episode of the Blood Red podcast. If you want us to do anything different, let us know in the comments. We'd be very, very keen to do something different with it being an international break. And if you're watching on YouTube, please give us a like. It only takes a second. Hit the thumbs up button. Press the bell, subscribe. If you listen on Apple, a few stars there would be much appreciated. Tell your friends, tell your wives, tell your children. Listen to the Blood Red podcast. Thanks very much. We'll see you again on Monday. Have a lovely weekend. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.